This episode is brought to you by Ursa Minor Outfitters. Folks, I'm absolutely in love with my Loon mug. It's handmade. It's an absolute piece of art. Whether it's at the office or at the house, people keep asking to check it out. If you're not a Loon fan, they also have other beautiful mugs for wildlife fans of moose, bears, and eagles. They specialize in products highlighting the outdoors and local pride through quality design by local artists. They've even started expanding into items beyond mugs, like apparel, dog accessories, and soon candles and more. They also try to partner and highlight other small businesses, and in some cases, forgo profits in lieu of charitable giving to help their community, such as the dog rescue. So check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and enter promo code HIKESMIKES10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for our four-legged hiking partners, they also have a portable silicone dog bowl and also a sweet over-the-collar dog bandana. Go check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and don't forget to enter promo code HIKESMIKES10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. Welcome everyone to the Hikes and Mikes podcast. I'm your host, Ivan, and together we'll embark on a weekly journey connecting with extraordinary hikers from all corners of the U.S. and beyond. As a warm embrace of summer envelops the Northern Hemisphere, we've had the privilege of conversing with remarkable individuals throughout this season. Their experiences and adventures will leave you yearning to hit the trails. And on today's episode, our amazing guest, Daniela, shares with us her amazing hiking and travel experiences both in the States and abroad. Make sure to follow her on Instagram, at DANNIMANTI. During our fun chat with Danny, we learn about how a last-minute trip cancellation turned into a popular family travel trip. She also shares about the incredible experiences she's had in her home country of Colombia and her unique trek up Rainbow Mountain, Peru. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode with our guest, Daniela. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Hikes and Mikes podcast. Really exciting guest with us today. Her name is Daniela. She'll be sharing about her hiking experiences both here in the United States and abroad. Thank you, Daniela, for coming here on the podcast. You know, we always like to ask our guests how long they've been hiking for and how they got started hiking.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited. I started hiking about 10 years ago. I've been traveling since I was younger than that, kind of around the world, but hiking was something that I hadn't particularly done a whole lot of until I was in high school, I would say. And I started mostly because my friends were also kind of into it. And the area that I lived at was closer to some mountains around here, which we don't have a lot of, but we have a few. That's kind of how I started. And I just fell in love with it. Once I started, I didn't stop.
Oh, that's awesome. You mentioned a little bit about your home base, but how would you describe your home base for your hiking adventures where you are now?
There's not a whole lot. I think Maryland is known more for the crabs, you know, the Chesapeake Bay and Ocean City. And then you have a couple of farms here and there. And then most of it is just suburbs of Baltimore and DC. So it's a lot of suburban land. I will say that we're close enough to Virginia to get some good hikes there. And then we're close enough to West Virginia to also get some good hiking there, about 2-3 hour distance, which isn't too bad if there's nothing else kind of close by. The few mountains that we do have in the state are usually bordering other states. So we'll have mountains near Frederick, where it's closer to West Virginia than it is to Maryland, I would say. There's a couple, just not as much as I think I personally would like.
Is there something unique in your neck of the woods or even in your region, like West Virginia and Virginia, that's unique to that part of the country that you might not see as far as like landscape in other parts of the United States?
There's a lot of green, I will say that. Especially, you know, when I've gone to Utah, Nevada, there's more red than actual green. And here you have a lot of green. So you'll see, because there's a lot of farms and there's a lot of nature. It's just not upwards, not mountainous. It's more farmland and a lot of trees, but there is a lot of green. You'll see a lot of green. In West Virginia, there's a really cool spot called Seneca Rocks, and it's both climbing and also hiking. And you can see, I believe, four states from that point because it touches on West Virginia, Virginia, Maryland, and if I'm not mistaken, parts of DC. If you look in the right way, you might not see it, but it's there. So it's a cool point because you can see different spots of the DMV.
It's almost like its own little version of Four Corners in the Southwest.
Yeah, a little bit, but less defined.
Gotcha.
It's more like you can point there and you're like, I'm pretty sure that's West Virginia.
Oh.
For West Virginia.
And you touched base on, you know, your visits to the Southwest and the West Coast. You've been to some amazing places, both here in the United States and abroad. What are some of your more memorable hiking destinations here in the U.S.?
Well, that's a great question. I think that Yosemite is definitely up there. I've only been once and I've been dying to go back because I went by for, I think, a day or two. And I sort of want to spend a whole week there. It's a really cool spot. I definitely liked a lot of the smaller state parks in Nevada that I didn't expect to find. I just kind of found them while I was there, like Valley of Fire and Red Rock Canyon. And those were really cool. They're smaller parks in the scale of, you know, national parks, but they're really cool. I think Valley of Fire is one of the coolest parks I've ever been to just because of the landscapes. And then if you wait until the sun is setting and everything is sort of illuminated and lit up, it's a really cool park.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I had been wanting to go to Valley of Fire for several years now, and I finally got a chance this February to go and visit. And you're right. Like, even though it's a small state park compared to the bigger national parks, just the beauty and the landscape is so different. And you captured, you know, the essence of a Valley of Fire. And like you said, the sunsets there are pretty amazing with the red rocks and the landscape. Oh, yeah. But, you know, traveling a little bit east, you also got a chance to visit Zion National Park. And did you get a chance to do Angel's Landing?
Yes, I did. So I've been to Zion about three times now. The first time I went was on a family vacation and we just kind of drove by. Nothing crazy. The second time I did a trip with my brother. So we did a siblings trip and we got to do some more hiking, but again, nothing too extensive because we had never been and we didn't quite know what were the places to really hit on. And then the last time I went was on my cousin's trip that we did in 2021. And we actually got to camp there, which was really cool. So we did Angel's Landing. I woke everybody up at 3 a.m. to drive from Vegas to Zion and to try to do the hike as early as possible. Obviously, forgetting the time difference once you get into Utah. So that was a bit of a bust, but we got there and we did it first thing in the morning. And we had, I think, about five other hikes planned after that. And we just couldn't do them because it's exhausting. It's a pretty hectic hike. I think it's a really dangerous hike too. People just don't really pay attention to that. And when you're on there, you just want to get to the top. So Angel's Landing, definitely one of my favorite views of Zion, for sure.
Did you get a chance to do that with your cousins, all of them?
Yeah.
Right on. And Daniela, you know, I always like to ask people that have done Angel's Landing because I haven't had a chance to do it. Which way up or down is, I guess, the sketchiest?
I think all of them. And it's mostly because you are hanging on to a railing that moves because it's so used and so many people are going up and down every day. When we were there, we went early in the morning. There was a big crowd already coming down as we were going up. And there was a lot of movement on the little ropes. So if you're scared of heights and scared of not having something to hang on to, I wouldn't recommend it just because it is pretty high up. It's kind of left to its own devices and people just go up of their own accord in different ways. But I think both of them are really scary. I really like the hike and I'm not scared of heights, but every time, you know, I went down and moved the little rope that's there, my heart skipped a beat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think it's, not chain link, but it's just like, it's not
like two little chains that are nailed to the ground, but they move.
Yeah.
So that already to me was like, a little scary. A little sketch. You only do that once.
Props to you for making it to the top and making it back down. For that one, Daniela, did you have to get a permit?
No, I think during COVID, they were doing permits just because they were trying to keep the number of people in the lows. Again, we went about 2 years ago, so it could be different now. I'm not sure, but we didn't need a permit. We did camp there, and that was a whole thing of its own, but we did camp there. So that gave us the opportunity to bring in our car and kind of have all our stuff in a designated spot, which was nice because when we came back down, we were so tired that we took a very long nap in the car. So that was helpful for sure.
That's a good little tip for folks, because I know Zion, especially, I think I saw it on the news this weekend that they had to close off vehicle entry this weekend because of the crowds. But yeah, if you have a camp spot, that guarantees you a parking spot at least.
I will say it's a hard place to camp because the ground is all rock. So when you're trying to, you know, hammer in your tent, you can't. And we spent about 3 hours trying to do this. And it was about 10 of us, and we were trying to nail our tents. And it also does not cool down at night. I think it actually gets warmer. So you're in the heat in a tent at night. So you know, you might want to think of that before you camp. Yeah. Not for everybody, I'll say that. It was definitely an experience.
You know, that's a few of your memorable experiences here in the national parks and state parks, but you've also done some really memorable hikes internationally. What are some of the more memorable ones that come to mind for you?
Ooh, there's a couple. Definitely my latest one in Colombia, the Cocora Valley, that was a really cool one. Again, mostly because of how I got there and sort of how everything was done for the hike before and after. So that was very memorable. We rode on the back of a Jeep, just hanging on for dear life while the guy's speeding through some unpaved roads in the country in Colombia. So that was an experience. That was very fun. And the hike itself was very difficult just because of the altitude and the rain that was coming down, but it was a really cool view, and it was something that I had wanted to do for a couple of years, so that was kind of a bucket list moment for me.
I think there's a video that you posted of you on the back of the Jeep holding on.
There's no belt, there's nothing holding you or tying you to this Jeep. You're just hanging on, and the guy's driving like there's nothing going on. He's just driving crazy, but it was fun, and it's definitely an experience. You know, I'm from Colombia, so seeing a lot of people go to that and be excited for that, in my head I'm like, yeah, that's just kind of how Colombians do things, but to them it's like, oh, this is so much fun, and this is, you know, an experience.
Yeah. And how did that kind of come about, Daniela? Was it like, did you have to book like a ride to get you to the trailhead, or was this like maybe just a hitchhiking or...
No. So Colombia is a very relaxing place for a lot of reasons. And one is that things are easily accessible on the spot. And that was one of those things. We got there early. We said, hey, we want to ride on the back of the Jeep because there's people sitting inside as well. You know, it's not just us three hanging in the back, but you can request where to hang on or sit in the Jeep. I was with a friend who had never been to Colombia, so she really wanted to do that. And I said, okay, cool, we'll request it. And that's kind of it. The Jeeps leave every morning, once an hour. There's Jeeps going back and forth. So it's not something that we had to book in advance or anything. I loved it. It was really cool, and I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah, definitely an unforgettable experience, especially with the scenery and the jungle that you guys were going through to reach the trailhead. It looked pretty spectacular. Now, what are some tips and advice? You mentioned that you had a friend that it was her first time to Colombia, but what are some tips or advice that you would give hikers if they are planning to visit Colombia or Peru?
Yeah, so for both of those places, I had already been before taking other people. I went to Peru when I was 15, so over 10 years ago. And so I was familiar with some of the things that needed to take place for you to get to Machu Picchu or where to stay in Cusco. So I was familiar with some of that beforehand. Same with Colombia. You know, I'm from there. I've lived there. So I know my way around some of these locations. So it's always nice to have that. For anyone who doesn't have a friend who's already been to these places before, definitely researching. A lot of people that make blogs and a lot of people that share their adventures like I do are happy to answer questions. I'm always happy to answer messages about where to stay and where I recommend going at any place that I've been to. So sometimes just asking, because you won't know until someone else tells you about their experience or you experience it yourself. But that's definitely recommended. Always ask people who've already been, or try to find a highly rated tour guide or tour group that can show you around as well. I think specifically for South America, there's a lot of questions about danger or safety. And a lot of the time, most of those places have a lot of backpackers, specifically European. And so I would recommend finding places that have a lot of those people. If you don't know the place and you're scared, if you're not scared to travel alone, I would say kind of jump in, be careful where you're going, and, you know, soak in the culture.
Solid advice. And I think you're right, Daniela. I think the 80s and 90s have put this picture in people's minds of South America, and there's a level of danger, but I feel like it's drastically changed over the last 20 years, 30 years. And I think one thing that I really enjoy about traveling abroad is the local people there are really friendly. And as long as you like attempt to speak the language or be friendly, they're more than willing to help you out.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I think that being Colombian and knowing how people view the country is really sad, because now that I travel and invite people with me to come back, they have such a fun time. And, you know, we did like, I think, 4 different cities, just the two of us alone with our backpacks and in our bags. And we were completely fine. We had the best time. We ate a lot of food, did a lot of different things. So I think it's just also about your attitude coming into places and, you know, finding out, yes, there are places right now that are really dangerous along those lines. But Colombia, thankfully, is not one of those at the moment. And neither is Peru. So that's all I can say.
No, yeah. You know, one thing I always tell people about Hawaii, at least from my experience, is the attitude plays a huge role in how your interactions are with people. And at least what I found personally was for individuals that visited the islands and were like, oh, I had a horrible experience, people were rude. If like you really dig into their experience, 99% of the time they were doing something that was disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And that resulted in their experience. But like you said, if you're a kind individual, respectful, you know, people are more than welcoming.
Yeah. And, you know, if any person that listens to this wants to go to Colombia, I'm happy to tell you places that you can go. I'm happy to recommend some of the people that drove us to different locations, if that's, you know, some things that you're concerned about. But overall, I highly recommend Colombia. It's beautiful. It's peaceful. It's fun.
It's an amazing landscape there. And, you know, traveling a little further south, you got a chance to hike and visit Peru. One picture in particular caught my eye, and that was the Inca ruins of Moray. Can mm-hmm. you share with listeners about the ruins and your experience visiting them?
That was a fun hike, mostly because I had traveled the whole day to get there. So my passport, I just got an American passport right before this trip, and I had to pick it up or else I couldn't travel outside the country. And fun fact, you have to get an appointment to get your passport, and they don't have a lot of appointments. So it's a whole thing. You know, I was able to get my appointment, but my cousins were already in Peru by the time my appointment came around. So I got there about 2 days after all of them. And I took, I think, 2 to 3 different planes, because you have to land in Lima and then you have to get to Cusco to get to all those locations. Currently, there's no international airport in Cusco, which is your point of departure for Machu Picchu, Rainbow Mountain, and the ruins of Moray. So you have to get to Lima, and then you have to take a 3-hour plane to Cusco. So it's about a 9 to 10 hour flight. I missed my first flight when I got to Lima, so I had to wait another 3 hours to get on my other 3-hour flight. So by the time I got there, I was very tired, and the altitude kind of hits you at a nowhere. I've been to Peru before, but when you have been traveling the whole day and you're kind of anxious and you're getting somewhere new, it hits you a little bit. So the first thing I did was drink some coca tea, and then we drove to the location. I had someone drive me there. It is beautiful. It's insane, I think, to think about the people that were built all these things and the altitude at which they built them at, because just walking around, you just feel your lungs overworking. And so it's pretty crazy to think about it. Also, because of the time when I got there, the sun was starting to set. So it created this almost mystical atmosphere, because you're on top of a mountain looking at these round structures that people built thousands and thousands of years ago. And it's amazing. I think it's a really cool thing to do. It's not necessarily a hike, but you definitely get to walk down and look at all the ruins, and they're gigantic. I mean, you see pictures of them, you're like, oh yeah, it's a little circular thing. No, they're enormous. And so it takes a while to get through them, but it's definitely one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen, I think, in my life. So I definitely recommend going there.
Like you said, you caught it at sunset, and the picture that you have on there, just, you're right. It makes it almost like mystical, magical, yeah. But yeah, you definitely captured it really beautifully in your picture.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of those ruins are more religious to them. They didn't just build things to build things. Most of those had religious significances for them. So when you also kind of factor that in, you're like, oh, that's cool. I'm standing at almost a holy place. Yeah.
You know, you've mentioned it already on the podcast, but I think this place is definitely on a lot of hikers' bucket list, especially in South America, and that's visiting Rainbow Mountain. How was your experience visiting and hiking Rainbow Mountain? And then, you know, of course, I want to ask, are the colors as distinct as in the pictures in real life?
Everybody asks me that. It's almost like people edit their pictures. Yeah. So there's no trust anymore. Yeah, it's a very difficult hike. I think it's the most difficult hike I've ever done, particularly because as you're going up, the altitude is also going up. You and the altitude are, you know, hand in hand trying to get up there. And it gets to a certain point where you have to stop because you cannot breathe. There's not enough oxygen for you to breathe. If you're a hiker that has never done altitudes, you need to train before you do this hike. Because sadly, I did see a lot of people kind of on the side. Some people were throwing up. Some people, you know, altitude will get you. You'll get, I don't think there's an English word, but soroche, which is just altitude sickness. And that can bring migraines and nausea and vomiting. So you want to be careful before you do this hike, for sure. It's absolutely beautiful. I was very tired, and there were these ladies that were from there, Peruvian ladies with horses, running up and down the mountain, offering people rides on the horses. And at one point, I was so tired that I said, you know what? Sure, I'll get on a horse. And I'm thinking, oh, the horse is going to take me to the top. And then, you know, I just have to do a little bit more of an ascend and I'll be good. 5 minutes later, she tells me to get off the horse because the horse can only go so far. So I paid a lot of money to get on a very small horse to go up a mountain for 5 minutes, basically. And the whole time she's telling me, don't move backwards because you can fall back and the horse will fall with you. So I'm riding like this, just like pushing forward my whole body. But anyways, we finally got up there, and it is very beautiful. It gets very crowded, I will say that. So the higher you can go, the better, because there's less people that can make it pretty high up. So my cousins, who are very energetic and athletic, they made it up there. Some went to like mountain next, the one we were at. Just, you know, crazy, crazy things that they were doing. But you can definitely explore the area. The colors are vibrant in person. I will say they're not as vibrant as you see on the pictures. But I think a lot of that has to do with how much sunlight you're getting at that altitude. And once you get to the top, the temperature changes completely. It drops by like 15 degrees. So it's a big shift, because next to you, there's, you know, snow-capped mountains. So it's pretty cold. It's pretty high up. Overall, it's a pretty cool hike. So I definitely recommend it. It's a bucket list hike for sure. And if you have done it before, you know that it's an accomplishment. And if you survived it and you didn't get sick or get a headache, then you got it.
And I gotta ask, Daniela, which one was sketchier, the horse ride or the jeep ride?
The horse ride. Because when someone tells you, hey, don't move because a horse will fall down a mountain, you gotta realize this is kind of the steepness of the mountain. It's very, very steep. So you already have an animal, you know, that's going at a very steep, rocky path. And then you put your weight on that animal. And then someone tells you, don't move back because you'll fall. Yeah. That's pretty scary.
Oh, man, what an experience. One thing that comes up frequently in your feed is your love for coffee. I love coffee, but I think you've definitely got a experience. Like, I feel like it's a different flavor when you get it in the country as opposed to, you know, getting it at the store. Colombia and Peru, they are known for their coffee. Now, this one, there might be some bias, but I got to ask, who has the better coffee? And yeah, how did your love for coffee kind of come about?
That's a good question. I was born in the coffee area of Colombia, and so was most of my family. And we never drank coffee when we lived in Colombia. My parents don't drink coffee at all. A lot of it had to do with their religion at the time and kind of the idea of a stimulant in your body. But I said, no, I'm going to drink coffee. So I started drinking coffee in high school. Crappy, watered-down Keurig coffee. And then I started moving up, and I made it my mission to find all the cool coffee shops around Maryland. I did find most of them for the most part. And so that's when I really started getting into high-quality coffee, I would say. And going to Colombia, I knew specifically with my friend that is also a huge coffee lover, that I needed to go to a coffee farm. And actually, I had gone to one before, but I wanted a more in-depth experience. And that was a whole experience of its own. our taxi broke down, actually, on our way. We were in the middle of nowhere in Colombia. And my friend and I had to get out and push, which she had never done, for sure. And so that was an experience of its own. We didn't think we would make it, if I'm quite honest. But we finally got to the coffee farm, and it was fantastic. I mean, we got to taste all the different coffee beans that they have. We got to pick some coffee beans ourselves. And there's a lot that goes into coffee that I had no idea. But my love for coffee is strong. It's a blood thing. My Colombian blood just craves the coffee. I'm a huge coffee lover, so...
And would you say Colombia has the better coffee?
Oh, I didn't even answer the question.
No, you're good.
I just started talking about coffee. Colombia definitely does. I think that right now there's a bigger attention on making it high quality that maybe wasn't there before. It was good before, amazing. But now people are intentionally paying attention to all the things that would make it better. So that's really cool to see as well.
You know, one of your most recent trips to Colombia is you had the unique jeep ride. How's the actual trail that you did?
It was fun until it started raining. You can tell that horses go on the trail. So it's uneven and it's a lot of altitude. And then when it started raining, I questioned if we would be able to finish it. It rains a lot in that area. And so you just kind of have to get used to the fact that it might rain at any given moment. At one point, it got sort of cloudy, but because the palm trees are so tall, it just looked really mystical. And I almost felt like I was in like a Colombian twilight because of just all the fog that came in, but you could still see the palm trees. So it made for really cool pictures. And I thought it looked really cool. The sun came out for about 5 seconds and we got some pictures with the sun out as well. But I really liked that it was cloudy and it was beautiful. The trail was sort of a loop. So we were able to come back before the thunderstorms came in. And when you're thinking about places like Colombia, Peru, where you know that, you know, native people were walking by there and probably thought of a lot of these places as, you know, religious and sacred for them, it makes it really cool because you're kind of walking in the fog and you're thinking about, wow, like, who found this place? Who thought this is a great place to put a house, you know?
Yeah.
And you just kind of picture that. And I think that a lot of Central and Southern American countries, you kind of get the vibe that there were people there before you that, you know, encounter these places and probably thought of them as sacred. And
it's a whole nother level of experience when you mm-hmm. do have that history in those locations. Now, one thing, Daniela, that, you know, you've mentioned, and I think it definitely comes across in your feed, but friends and family are a huge part of your hiking adventures. And it's really great to see that strong bond, especially when it comes to the outdoors. Has that something that's been developed over time, or did kind of everybody have the love for the outdoors so it was easy to just bring everyone together?
No and no. For my cousins specifically, I have a large family. I have a lot of cousins. The ones that you see on my feed are not even the tip of the iceberg, but those are kind of the ones closest in proximity to me at the moment. One of them lives in Miami, a couple of them live here in Maryland, a couple of them live in Colombia, Puerto Rico, so they're kind of all over the place. And the first trip that we did in 2021 was more out of necessity because I had booked a trip with someone else who backed out last minute to do Zion and Bryce and Death Valley. And so I had a whole trip planned out. And my cousin, I talked to her and I said, hey, you know, he canceled on me, so I don't know what to do with this. It's not refundable. And she said, well, maybe I can go. And then shortly after, her brother said, oh, maybe I can go. And then our other cousin said, maybe I can go. And then it was nine of us all of a sudden. And then we just started adding cousins on every trip. Our last trip, we added two more. And so that's kind of how it came about. I don't think any of them particularly love the outdoors. I think it's more of about the experience. And some of them are very athletic. Some of them just love to travel. And we just kind of figure out what we want to do on the way. A lot of them have ended up being hikes. And I think it's just because of the places we've been to. But I think eventually, I'm not sure we'll do a cousins trip this year just because of scheduling. But if we do one next year, it's going to be less hiking for sure. but it's very fun. I think we didn't grow up with each other, so it's kind of our bonding time now than when we were younger. And we're all at different age groups. I think the oldest one, and I'm sorry if you're hearing this, the oldest one is close to 42, 43. And then the youngest one is 17, which is my brother. So we have all wow. the ages, all the, yeah, it's a very cool thing that we've been able to do. And
it looks like you guys have a blast. Everyone's smiling in your pictures, just having a good time. And how great to have that diverse age range and just the different experiences you guys can have on these trips is really, really great to, like you said, strengthen the bond amongst each other. Yeah. And how cool that you've been able to add more and more cousins to these trips.
Yeah, at this point, I don't know how we're going to fit more people. we have a ton more. There's some that, you know, they have kids of their own, not the ones that I travel with, but other cousins that have kids close to my age. So they're wanting to add themselves as well. So I don't know where it's going next year. I don't know if we'll be able to do a giant trip in a while, just because, again, scheduling and stuff like that. But I hope so. It's a lot of fun. My cousins are very fun. We do a lot of sing-alongs, and that's kind of the whole car ride anywhere. It's just music blasting and singing and telling jokes and taking pictures of each other when we're sleeping. So a lot of that.
That's something that I've really enjoyed seeing over the last decade. You know, being Latino, and when I first started hiking, you know, 15 years ago, at least in the Pacific Northwest, there wasn't that diversity like there is now. And being able to come across groups like your family on the trails where it's just, you know, a large group of Latinos enjoying the outdoors and having a great time. You know, for you being a BIPOC hiker, how has your experience been with the outdoors and the outdoors community?
That's a great question. I think that it's been mixed in the sense that a lot of times I'm the only person of color in a lot of these situations, unless I'm, you know, with my 10 cousins and there's more of us than anything else. But for example, when we were in Colombia with my friend who's half Latina as well, we noticed that in a lot of these hiking locations and hostels, we were the only people of color, even in South America, right? So I think it's interesting, the concept of Latinos being outdoors and backpacking. I think it's very new. And I think that a lot of companies don't know what to do with it because they don't make the clothes for people like us. You know, they don't advertise for people like us who are Latinos and are trying to figure out the outdoors. The market is not meant for us. And so I think, and you know, I was having this conversation with another person that does a lot of hiking and traveling and shares it on her social media, kind of about the lack of diversity still in a lot of these places. And finding a space for yourself is really hard. And I think that, you know, just because I live in the States doesn't absolve me from enjoying the outdoors elsewhere and feeling included in a lot of the conversations as to how to help other Latinos get outside has also been interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's not something that I think a lot of Latinos used to have because it's expensive to travel. It's expensive to have hiking gear, you know, proper hiking gear. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago where they started, you know, doing the worn wear things that companies are doing where their used items are returned and you're able to get it at a lower price. So I think a lot of it also has to do with the cultural aspect of it and the idea that a lot of us didn't grow up having money. You know, I didn't grow up skiing or snowboarding. So a lot of things that we didn't grow up doing just because of not having access to it. And so I think that also has to do a lot with that. There's a lot of, I know, nonprofits and companies that are making the effort, like climbing companies that are making the effort to teach kids for free how to climb, and which is another very expensive sport to get into, is climbing. So a lot of these things aren't accessible to us because, unfortunately, a lot of us didn't come to the country with money or grow up here with a lot of money. And so a lot of those things didn't feel accessible to us. So I think it's a mixed experience. A lot of the access I have now is because I've saved up and bought something, or I've traveled and companies now want to work with me, or whatever that might be. But it would be nice to see more people like myself being featured in a lot of these campaigns that companies are doing. But that's my take on that.
Oh, thank you for sharing, Daniela. And you've hit on all valid points. And for me personally, one thing that I've been trying to do is I have a younger niece who's, 12 years old, and being able to expose her to the outdoors at a younger age to show her the accessibility is something that I'm working towards. Because for me, I didn't really start hiking until after high school. And I was lucky enough to have a friend who was in the Forest Service who was able to show me the outdoors. But I think you're right, like when it comes to hiking or even snowboarding, it wasn't something I could really get into until I was an adult and I had the money and funds to be able to get involved in a deeper level with those activities. Yeah, you're right. There's some really great nonprofits doing some amazing work. Here in Washington State, we have the Discover Pass, which is a yearly pass for state parks and other recreational areas run by the state of Washington. And there's a great nonprofit earlier this spring that was giving free Discover passes to BIPOC families, which I thought was amazing.
And yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's deeper conversations to be had on that subject. And, working, I'm a social worker, so I see also a lot of lack of accessibility for a lot of things for our people here in this country. And so I think the outdoors is just a minuscule part of that lack of accessibility for things here in the States. But the fact that we still do it is kind of shows the resilience, and the fact that we're making our way, even if a lot of these companies didn't recognize that we needed our own way, is pretty amazing. So we're getting there.
Exactly. And one thing that I hope in the next couple of weeks, and this you know, will probably come out in July, but starting to reach out to some of these Latino-owned companies that are, you know, getting off the ground, but that have a love for the outdoors, and being able to highlight them on this platform is something I'm looking forward to. And not just Latinos, but any BIPOC-owned company that's trying to break down some barriers when it does come to the outdoor community. Switching gears, Daniela, you know, one thing that I always like to ask our guests is, when it comes to hiking, you know, maybe it's reaching the summit or reaching the end of the trail, do you have a regular routine that you do, whether it's, you know, packing a favorite snack and meal to have, maybe it's a drink, or even just a moment of zen? But is there a regular custom that you do when you make your destination, or maybe when you make it back out?
I think a lot of that depends on who I'm with, or if I'm by myself. Usually if I'm hiking with my cousins and we've just finished a really long hike, the first thing we'll do is take a picture, because half of them will start going back down immediately. they're tired, they're done, they just want to go. And then a lot of the rituals I have is I pack a snack every time and I reward myself with food. And that seems to be the most continuous ritual I have if I've reached the summit. And something else we do a lot is, once we have hiked and we've done good hike and we've come back down, we get food and then we play Uno. I have a cousin who collects Unos, so he has every kind of Uno imaginable, and he brings one everywhere with him. It's on his person all the time. So we usually end up eating and playing Uno at the end of our hike.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. I can imagine after a hike, it could get, you know, a little rowdy trying to get those Unos.
Yeah. And I think we've played Uno on top of mountains too. I think we did Rainbow Mountain, but people are just too tired, so we usually wait until we're back on low ground.
I love it. Now, when it comes to your personal pack list, Daniela, is there an item that you consider your most valuable piece of hiking gear?
Yes, definitely my boots. I value them a lot, and I've saved up and bought probably my dream boots, and I use those on every trip. I also use my Blundstones, and I actually am lucky enough to be working with that company, so I wear those a lot, and those are probably my favorite boots, not just for hiking, but you can kind of wear them everywhere. They're not bulky, so I take those everywhere.
That's one thing that's tough that I'm trying to deal with is, you know, I want a good hiking boot, but also a boot that if I am in a town or even just in the campground, that I could still wear. Yeah. And not feel like they're too heavy or too...
Exactly. And that's why I like them, because when I go internationally, I don't want to take my gigantic hiking boots with me because they're heavy and, you know, they're tight sometimes because they're meant for hiking and movement. And so with Blundstones, you can just kind of wear them with jeans and walk around and be fine.
I like it. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to coffee, do you have a preference? Coffee before a hike or after a hike?
Before. I need the energy. I'll need a coffee and like a croissant or something. And then I'm good to go.
And we're halfway through the year. Is there any upcoming hiking goals for you personally for 2023 and beyond?
I have a lot coming up travel-wise. Maybe not as much hiking-wise, but travel-wise, yes. Later this year, I'll be going to El Salvador, so I'll be hiking a volcano, which I'm very excited about. Never been to El Salvador, very excited. Going with a friend who I've never traveled with before, so I'm also excited about that. It's fun to kind of see how people live their lives. So I'm excited for that. And then later on this year, I'll be going down to Florida. So not much hiking, but I'm trying to find all the cool places to paddleboard and find clear water. So that'll be fun. And then later on this year, I'm going to be going to Colombia again. So I'm not sure if I'll do much hiking, but I'll be down there again.
You know, the last question I want to ask you, Daniela, for the next generation of Latinos and Latinas who want to get involved with the outdoors and get into hiking, what are some tips and advice that you'd give, you know, the next generation of Latino hikers?
You don't need a lot to hike. You can start with some tennis shoes. And, you know, I think there's this concept that to be outdoorsy, you have to be going to a lot of the places I've been to, but you know, that's the only thing there is to being outdoorsy or to being recognized by a lot of these brands. And there is some truth to that, but also just going outside, taking a walk is kind of a good way to start finding cool trails in your area, finding cool places to go to in your state or wherever you're at. I think that's always a good start. And finding people that like to be outside as well, finding a good group of people that encourage that activity. I think that's always a good place to start. And that's kind of where I started too.
Solid advice. Well, that was it for the regular questions, Daniela. This next section of the podcast is the this or that questions. I'm going to give you two hiking related topics and you choose the one that you prefer out of the two. So the first one is, do you prefer ascending or descending?
Descending.
And how about waterfalls or summits?
Summits.
And when it comes to the trail, do you prefer switchbacks or straight up?
Straight up.
And are you a fan of trek poles or do you prefer freehand?
Freehand.
For footwear, trail runners or boots?
Boots.
And then when it comes to trails, do you prefer a loop trail or an out and back trail?
Both? Is that an option?
Yeah, you can do both.
I like them both.
Now, when you come across a body of water on your hikes, do you jump in or do you stay dry?
I'll jump in if it's hot enough. If it's cold, enough.
When it comes to sunsets or sunrises, which one do you prefer?
Ooh, I like them both as well. Yeah.
And this one might be a little tough because, you know, the East Coast is known for their fall colors, but spring flowers or fall colors?
Fall colors, definitely. I have too many allergies to see the flowers.
And the last one is, do you tag a hike or do you not tag a hike on social media?
I tag them. I think it's important that people can see the things that you see in terms of the beauty of nature. I think it's crappy to not tag a place because then you're preventing other people from enjoying it too. It's like, oh, I went, but I'm not going to tell you where it is.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a controversial topic over the last couple of years on social media and the hiking community.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say for sure, half the places that I've been to and have tagged are places that are very common and people go every day. It's not like a secret location. If it was something where it's more limited and I, you know, had to pay to get in and like it's like the wave in Arizona that it's more controlled, maybe. But even then, we're excluding groups of people.
Yeah.
And I don't, that doesn't feel right to me.
And one thing that I've really enjoyed from people when it comes to this topic is we briefly touched on it about visiting Colombia and other countries, but a lot of content creators will tell you as long as you ask. And I think that's something that sometimes is lost is people are too afraid to ask, like, oh, where is this place?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I've found that if people ask me, I tend to create PowerPoints for the places I'm traveling to send to my cousins if they're coming with me or my friends. And so I'm happy to share that with people if they want it, if they ask.
Well, Daniela, it's been an awesome time chatting with you here on the podcast. For folks interested in following along on your adventures, where online are some good places they could follow you?
My Instagram is my main kind of source of sharing things. Before I forget, I do want to add that I am going to Colombia at the end of the year on a humanitarian trip. So we're serving about 300 kids that are currently living in poverty. And so if anyone would also want to make a donation, I'm also open to receiving those, or if anyone's interested in finding out more about that. So definitely my Instagram, you can send me messages or comment on my pictures. That's the one I use the most.
Yeah, Daniela, send over the link and we'll be sure to include the donation link on the episode show notes so folks that are interested in helping out can help out.
Perfect.
Well, again, thank you so much, Daniela. It's been a really great time chatting with you, and I'm excited to see your upcoming adventures both here in the States and abroad.
Thank you. I'm excited too.
And that brings us to the end of this episode alongside Danny. We extend our heartfelt thanks to Daniela for coming on the podcast. Make sure to stay connected and follow her adventures on Instagram at DANNIMANTI. And don't forget to check out the episode show notes for all the important links we discussed today. We have an incredible lineup of episodes planned throughout the summer, and we can't wait to share them with you. New episodes will be dropping every Monday, with occasional bonus episodes on Fridays. To ensure you never miss out on any thrilling tales, remember to hit the like and subscribe button. Your support means the world to us. Don't forget to join our vibrant community on Instagram, at Hikes and Mikes. We'll be sharing episode visuals, my own personal hiking content, and so much more. Let's stay connected and continue to inspire each other on this remarkable journey. As we bid farewell, remember to tread those happy trails, embrace the great outdoors, and keep the spirit of adventure alive. Until next time, my fellow explorers, happy hiking. A special shout out goes to our incredible audio editor, Alex, whose exceptional skills and dedication help bring each and every episode to life week after week. Thank you, Alex, for your invaluable contribution to the Hikes and Mikes podcast. This episode's music was created by Ketza. Follow him on Instagram at Ketza Music. This episode is brought to you by Flip Socks. Whether you're on the trail, on the job, or in the yard, Flip Socks will keep Mother Nature out of your boots with their innovative nylon sleeve. You no longer need to worry about any annoying debris getting trapped in your boots during your hikes. Simply flip down the nylon sleeve over any boot to prevent Mother Nature from finding its way inside, keeping your feet comfortable all day long. To get your first pair, visit flipsockswithaz.com and enter promo code HikesMikes10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for listeners who use the promo code at checkout, I'll be donating 100% of the Season 2 promo code proceeds to Big City Mountaineers, who provide transformative experiences through connections to nature that strengthen life skills and build community for youth and disinvested communities across the nation. So if you're tired of bits and pieces of the trail finding its way into your hiking boots, pick up a pair of Flip Socks today with the promo code HikesMikes10 to get 10% off. For website and promo code, see the episode description.